Welcome to Venturi's Voice. I'm Andy Davis. Venturi's Voice brings together thought leaders from a variety of industries who are taking the most innovative approaches to leadership and staffing. Imagine having a mix of experienced mentors sharing their secrets on leadership, recruiting, onboarding, engagement, and motivating, as well as stories on life lessons they've learned along the way. And it's free. If you're the head of a major corporation leading a team of hundreds or about to take on your first leadership role, this podcast is for you. The show is about you, and we're here to help you become the best leader you can be. Stay up to date with the latest shows by subscribing on iTunes and SoundCloud, as well as signing up to the newsletter at venturi-group.com, where you can find the latest IT jobs, talent, and blogs on all things leadership, staffing, and development. I'd love to hear from you, so drop me a line anytime by email at andy.davis@venturi-group.com. Any feedback or requests are always welcome. Enjoy the show. Today's guest is Jeff Mayerson, the host of the very popular podcast Software Engineering Daily.
So Software Engineering Daily, where did that come from, and how did it all start?
I started it when I was at Amazon, but right after I left Amazon, because I had been a volunteer for a podcast called Software Engineering Radio for 3 years at that point. I had started doing Software Engineering Radio in college. And I saw the numbers. There were about 50,000 people who would listen to an average episode, and this was a volunteer-only podcast about software engineering. So I figured if a volunteer-only podcast about software engineering that has a really good process can get 50,000 listeners, if I just copy the same format and do it daily, I can probably get at least 10,000 listeners. I figured 10,000 listeners would be enough to turn enough of an advertising profit to break even on my lifestyle. And I figured it would be a cool business to run that would allow me to learn about software and learn the basics of business. And that's how Software Engineering Daily came to be.
So the concept of it is great. You know, we're obviously big advocates of it. We cover, we've had software engineers on the show before, but we obviously have a little bit more of a broader range, and the kind of topics are obviously a lot different than I think what you guys cover. But the appetite, from what I've read on the site, seemed to be that people just wanted kind of a bit more of a technical show. So how do you go about kind of sourcing, getting the resources to in order to kind of put together a great show? Is it similar to any kind of product, I suppose, where you're always kind of testing, adjusting, and kind of getting to the point where the product's at its finest?
There's a lot to preparation, and I prepare a ton for every show. I make sure that I have a detailed outline, and I've studied the technical concepts in enough detail to have an educated conversation about it. When I started Software Engineering Daily, that was the table stakes that you needed to get kind of noticed in the podcasting world. It's gotten much more competitive. There are a lot of other people who are doing the necessary amount of preparation to put on a good podcast these days. So you really have to take it over the top with not only preparation, but good audio quality. You have to have a great scheduling process. You have to cater to the guests' needs. And then if you're talking about building a profitable business, you have to do an excellent job of catering to the advertisers. And gathering feedback in the process, as well as, I listen to most of my own podcasts to dog food them as a consumer, and that helps with the feedback as well.
Interesting, yeah. I mean, it's a diligent approach, isn't it? And I think that, as you say, everyone's kind of able to take advantage of the podcast platform now if they wanted to. And it is an art, and, we're not doing it quite to the level that you guys are, but it's still been a learning process for me, and something that each show, I'd like to think I get a little bit better, maybe. I certainly hope so anyway. And there is an art to it. There's an art to conversation. And, I think yours is different in the sense that it can be allowed to be a bit more structured. We're kind of on the other side, where we're kind of building more of the sort of fly on the wall content, and people are interested in the people on the show. So, your guys are clearly about the kind of the topic. So it's a slightly different structure, but nonetheless, I can really appreciate the preparation that you know, it must go into the shows. So talking about your kind of background then, so I assume you were a software engineer yourself, and that's how it all came about.
That's right.
So what was the kind of progression then from the career? You know, you mentioned that you were at Amazon. That must have been kind of a compelling experience. And, you know, I'd be interested to see what that, kind of your journey's been like, your career journey. And, you know, I suppose the things that you've, you know, continuously learned along the way, and, you know, your approach, I suppose, to building a career that's, you know, that's been successful so far.
Yeah. You know, I wasn't gratified at my engineering jobs, and this is something I've talked about some in the podcast. You know, I do my best to keep a positive atmosphere in the podcast, but something I think that is underappreciated by employers in the software industry is that your software engineer employees have a lot of latitude, and they can leave your company and they can go elsewhere. And that's what I did like 5 or 6 times at all the different companies that I worked at, because I was not gratified. And I communicated my lack of gratification to the management, and I felt like it was not well received. Now, that said, I kind of don't blame them, because I would join a company, and then you know I would see the work, and I'd be like, well, this isn't really interesting to me. Can I do this other thing? And they would be like, no, we hired you to do this thing. And I would say, well, okay, I'm going to leave then. And you know, I'm sure anybody in management who's listening to this probably hears that and is like, yeah, I would have probably let that person go. And I left of my own accord in these different situations. But I just got the sense that like, why is it this way? Like, why is there not a better way of doing engineering where there's a more copacetic relationship between the employee and the employer? I don't claim to have an answer to that, but what I'll say is I don't think I'm an unproductive engineer, because I've created a lot of side projects on my own. I've built things that that I'm proud of. Maybe the code base isn't the cleanest, but I put a lot of work into it, and so I would say, you know, my most of my engineering time has been, of the things that I'm proud of, has been outside of the companies that employed me. I don't know if that answers your question.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's interesting, and I think it just alludes to the fact that not everyone's designed to be in an organization with however many layers of management, and you know, probably elements of bureaucracy in some places. And you know, there's a lot of different responsibilities now that are kind of additionally being thrown on just technical people in general. You know, it's different. And you know, 5 years ago, maybe even 10, call it, for just to be on the safe side, it was very much you came in, you did your job, and that was kind of it. You know, we know from a recruitment perspective, you know, that it was a skills orientated thing. You came in, you did your job, and if they had the technical abilities, great. Now, technology is the product in pretty much most businesses these days. So, you know, you have to be able to articulate your work. There's so much more collaboration internally, and it's just I think it's a different job. It's evolving. As teams grow, you know, you might not always get to work on the projects that you want to work on. And I can imagine that to be frustrating, because, you know, a lot of technical people, you know, especially software engineers, they do software engineering because they enjoy it. You know, they're all, as you were saying, you work on projects on the side. That's not a job that you're just clocking in and clocking out from 9 till 5. And that's something that you genuinely enjoy. So if you're doing something you genuinely enjoy, and then being put on projects that, you know, you might not find as compelling, then,
correct,
you know, that's going to obviously be kind of frustrating. So, it makes total sense that it's not for everyone. I'm always curious about how can people think with that. But, you know, you obviously have the kind of entrepreneurial skill set to be able to build something for yourself, which I suppose is probably quite a rare combination for technical people, if I'm not, you know, being too general.
Perhaps, yeah, you could be right. I'm not sure. That's something I definitely try to weave into the podcast is some at least educating people who are engineers, whether they're burgeoning engineers or they've been in the industry for a while, that you know, you can become you can control your own destiny in many circumstances. I mean, many people are in situations where they cannot control their own destiny, whether they're, you know, like if I was working to earn my citizenship in the United States, I would not have the latitude to act like a spoiled brat at the companies that I worked at, where I left after 5 months. And, you know, I wasn't great at communicating my lack of happiness with the management and whatnot, you know, or if I had, you know, two children to take care of, maybe I could not be as aggressively entrepreneurial. But on the other hand, I think if you are a young, spoiled person in the richest country in the world, you should do everything in your power to take risks and try to maximize the value that you can deliver to the global economy. And so that's, you know, that's kind of the outlook that I've had, and it's just that's just kind of what I've been compelled to do from a utilitarian standpoint.
Yeah, it's interesting, and it's quite profound that, you know, you have these kind of big thoughts. But I think it's also okay to for people to turn around and go, you know what, it's actually just more fun to do this as well. And I think that's where people kind of get caught up these days. I think that there's not enough people kind of looking at a career as something that they might enjoy. It's like kind of looking at it in something that, you know, makes kind of sense because it's safe or accept whatever the case might be. I think that if more people kind of put energy into things that they actually enjoy, then we'd be in a better place. And I just wonder as well, I mean, this is just a thought, and I'm sure neither you or I would be able to answer this, but I just wonder now, because people know that the demand's there for technical people, whether how many people in this kind of next generation are going to get involved in technical work because they want to, versus this is a career path. Because I know when I was going through school, it wasn't really kind of a career path that was ever really sold to you.
Mm. Yeah. I mean, I didn't find out about computer science until my fourth or fifth year of college, or no, I think my third year of college. And once I took a class on it, I was like, oh, well, this is definitely what I want to be doing, engineering work, whether I'll be a software engineer or a product manager or whatever. I don't think I even really had a vision at that point, but getting introduced to technical engineering stuff and realizing, oh, this is actually something that anybody can do, was an inspiring moment for me.
It is. And, you know, I think that you have a clear vision, which also helps as well. So I wonder now, you know, with where the show is at the moment, what the what I suppose the next few years looks like and what you hope to kind of achieve from it. You know, are you looking at other platforms aside from just the podcast, maybe video or something like that, or are you happy with the platform the way it is?
The large vision that we have is to build a platform for consuming and sharing content about technical software topics. So we have a project we're working on called Software Daily. If you go to softwaredaily.com, you can see the what it looks like. Essentially, so for example, let's say you are a power listener to Software Engineering Daily. So there's a lot of people who listen to 3 to 4 episodes per week. That's like 3 to 4 hours of content. That's highly technical content. And if you listen to 3 episodes about Kubernetes, that's a container or popular container orchestration framework within software engineering. So it's a very niche topic within a niche area. We should be able to know that you are interested in Kubernetes content, and we should be able to recommend to you the best Kubernetes content. And this would extrapolate to less technical topics as well. For example, self-driving cars. If you listen to 3 episodes about self-driving cars, we should be able to recommend to you additional written content about self-driving cars. So the notion is, let's say you are listening to a podcast and you're walking to a coffee shop, as I do on a regular basis. Coffee is my greatest addiction, and I'll be walking to Starbucks and I'm listening to a podcast about self-driving cars, and I'll land at the coffee shop, pick up my coffee, and sit down to read about self-driving cars for 20 minutes. There should be a connection between the podcast and the written content that I pop up on my phone. And that's really what Software Daily is it's a platform that connects the podcast element of Software Engineering Daily to other written content. It also has community elements, the ability to connect to other engineers, the ability to chat with other engineers, and build relationships. And the vision is to create a community and an information platform around software and software engineering. Another way of looking at it is the Wall Street Journal is the paper of record for the financial industry, or at least it was, you know, for many years. You know, if you are in finance, you wake up, you read the Wall Street Journal with your coffee, and you get news. You get news, but it's through the lens of the finance world. And if you're in finance, you don't just want to know about the niche topics of finance. You want to know how Procter & Gamble's purchase of a toothpaste subsidiary is going to affect bond prices. So it's like how disparate events are going to affect your world. And it's through the lens of finance. So this is sort of like a way of viewing the world through the lens of software. It's a news organization. It's a media organization. It's an information organization. But it's also a modern platform where there's community and there's conversation. That's what Software Daily is. And so that's the vision. That's what we're building towards right now.
It's a great vision. So I can assume that there's been hurdles to overcome as you progress so far. There's always unexpected hurdles, I suppose. So what are some of the kind of surprising elements and that have been, particularly complicated to overcome being so far in the journey? If you're okay to share some of those, of course.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The biggest hurdle for me was learning to focus, and I'm still learning this and learning how to narrow what I'm doing. I think there are some people out there who have trouble because they get stuck in a rut and they do the same thing over and over and over again, and they can't figure out how to explore new areas. I have a problem of chronically exploring too much at once, and when you try to do too many things at once, you fail at all of those things. I started a business about a year and a half ago called Ad for Prize, and this was an advertising business. I started it because of some knowledge that I had learned on Software Engineering Daily about the ad tech industry and just some problems, and those problems still exist. And I don't really regret starting the business, but I guess I regret starting it at the same time as I was running another operationally intensive business. And I've tried to do a couple. There's another business I tried to start at the same time as I was running these other two businesses, and just doing multiple things is just terrible. You should just do one thing, do it extremely well. Maybe if you're Elon Musk and you can hire tons and tons of people and you can get leverage from those people, then that's fantastic, and you should go start multiple businesses. But if you're like me and you're not a visionary figure with hundreds of millions of dollars at your disposal, you should not start multiple businesses because you don't have any leverage. And so you are the one who is ultimately doing much of the operational work. And similarly, if you're earlier in your career and you're not at a stage where you're starting businesses, you're just trying to build skills or whatever, you should decide what is the thing that you're going to just become amazing at. And it could be the fusion of two things, but you should be very aware of what you're trying to get excellent at, and you should have a vision for how the work that you're doing and the skills that you're building are going to compound into a extremely differentiated skill or set of skills that perhaps you can spin into a business or an art form or something that will give you gratification. So just to wrap those into a nice little bow, the biggest thing I did wrong is lack of focus.
What's some of the key kind of lessons that you think you've learned from the podcast? My experience from doing this show has been phenomenal in, you know, I feel like the knowledge that I picked up, the different type of people that I've managed to engage with and learn from all kind of, you know, technical to leadership positions. You know, we've even had like kind of HR people on the show. What have been some of the kind of most profound lessons you feel you've learned from, you know, your time working on the show?
I've done my best to learn how to listen more actively and pay extremely close attention to what people are saying. I've also learned in my preparation process for different podcast episodes to anticipate where the conversation might go and have strategies prepared to follow the guest down different directions that they might want to go and be deterministic about that in my thinking. And I'll have a mental map for where things might go. I mean, I think some of it is like the Dale Carnegie, How to Win Friends and Influence People stuff. You know, that's not necessarily employing it, like calling people by their first name actively, like, Andy, you are doing such a great job with this podcast. Like, that kind of stuff is actually good to know. It's not necessarily like you need to employ it, but you should at least understand the human psychological tendencies that lead to those being good strategies to employ, the Dale Carnegie type of stuff. I mean, there's a lot of books about human psychology that I've read that have been actionable, and they just, I mean, it's hard to pinpoint anything specifically. But paying close attention to human psychology and thinking and putting yourself in the other person's shoes. I used to play a lot of poker, so this became second nature to me pretty early on, but really trying to think at all times. How is this person feeling right now? How is this person thinking right now? Which direction should I take this conversation? Does this person need an opportunity to talk more about the technical aspects of their platform? Do they want to talk more about management aspects? So I would say all the interpersonal stuff, that you cannot underestimate the interpersonal just the interpersonal dynamics, because that's what a podcast is. That's why people are tuning in. They're tuning in to, like, my beliefs about podcasting are, we live in a time where much of our interaction has become digitized, and it's a deeply lonely time for many people, and the ability to tune in and have two people in your ears having a conversation and feeling like you're sitting in a cafe. Listening to these two people, and you're sitting at the same table as them, and you're privy to an intimate conversation. People want that intimacy. That's what they're tuning in for. Otherwise, they would be listening to an audiobook. I love Audible, but I think podcasts have a more fiery, loyal fan base than audiobooks.
Yeah, I think so. Like you say, it's really the fly on the wall content, isn't it, that I think people kind of enjoy about it, and it is just that kind of conversational format. It just seems to be taking off as well. It's definitely getting more popularized, you know. You see some of the huge podcasts, the Joe Rogan Experience and stuff like that. They're just getting like outrageous. They're getting bigger numbers, bigger numbers than like the TV stations now.
Mm-hmm. Do you listen to Joe Rogan?
Yeah. I've actually met him. And
wow.
When I was working out in California, I worked for a startup, and neuroscience startup. So I actually got our head neuroscientist on the Joe Rogan podcast. So we actually went to the studio and met him, which was pretty cool. So
wow,
yeah, it was great, and the show was pretty good as well. I can't remember which number it is, but it was Dr. Andrew Hill. He's on the show, so yeah, it was great. But yeah, I mean, you know, that just looking at that as an example, you know, it's I think it validates what you just mentioned.
Well, Joe Rogan is the ultimate example of an active listener. I think people tune in because they hear him talk to so many different people, and he's just in the zone. In every conversation, he's picking up every word that the guest is saying. And because he's picking up every word, every time that the guest speaks, he is absorbing every modicum of detail, and he is able to pinpoint the thing to dive deeper on. And so that's how his conversations get so deep and so crazy, because he is listening so well.
The the interesting thing about, I think, just technology and podcasts and, you know, I think it goes for all kind of forms of content, are this way that we can collaborate and connect with people. I certainly think that we look at open source, GitHubs of the world, you know, we look at blogs, podcasts, etc. It seems to me that that movement of sharing and just kind of giving things away for free, collaborating on projects, it definitely was kind of a movement that came from the technical community, and one that, like, I'm the biggest fan of in the world. I just think that it's fantastic, and I think it just enhances innovation, and I think it's the way that we all should have worked, you know, just breaking down barriers and, you know, being transparent and collaborating. You know, there's no hiding behind anything anymore. It's definitely come from the technology, and it's something I've enjoyed. You know, why do you think that was? And it's, again, quite a big question, but why do you think that this is where we are now, that people are so compelled to share and kind of give things away, if you like?
Well, it's because the cost to doing things has been dramatically reduced by software, and because the fundamental, you know, I talked about leverage a little bit earlier. The reason many different people can gain leverage, whether they have a ton of money and a ton of employees or not, is because software is such a point of leverage. And you know, I think the first person to really capture this was Bill Gates, who sold Windows 95 for $100 and printed it on a 92-cent compact disc. And that's, you know, you make a 99% profit margin off of that that piece of software. And, you know, he captured a whole lot of value from that, but he also ended up building a whole lot of resentment from people, and that was kind of his downfall. And Google learned from that. And so it has built a sense of goodwill. People love Google. People love and trust Google. They love and trust Amazon because these businesses figure out ways to pass on much of the leverage that they gain from their technology to their users and their customers. So, you know, you look at Gmail or you look at Google search and you're like, wow, you know, Google is giving me so much. Or you look at GitHub and you look at the open source nature and say, wow, this is so, you know, I get so much out of this. You look at Facebook or Twitter and it's like, wow, these free services. And really what's happened is we have technology that allows these companies to build extremely high leverage services, and so that they can pass on a large percentage of that that marginal gain to their users, to their customers, who in turn, you know, will pass on some of those gains to each other, and so that's what's going on. Like, we just have more abundance. It's not like people have become more charitable or anything. The people who are seemingly the most charitable are often playing the longest game. It's not like they are just simply charitable. They are just extremely crafty and very disciplined and very long-term oriented. So they're not the person who is who's going to take you to a coffee shop and buy you a cup of coffee and then ask you for a massive favor. They're the type of person that's going to buy you a cup of coffee and ask you nothing for it. And then your goodwill towards that person is going to compound and compound and compound over time. And eventually they might ask you for something that's quite significant and you feel no ill will in doing that thing for them. So that's how the world has changed. It's just there's more abundance and so people are playing a longer game.
Awesome, mate. Well, thank you so much, Jeff. Enjoyed the conversation, so thank you.
Likewise.
Thanks for listening to Venturi's Voice. Please make sure you subscribe at iTunes or SoundCloud, or check out the website venturi-group.com and keep up to date with the latest IT jobs, talent, news, and podcasts. Or drop me a line. It's andy.davis@venturi-group.com. Any feedback, topics, or guest suggestions are always welcome. And thanks again for listening to the show. See you next time.